Hey, everybody, we're back for another episode of Turn It Off with Tracy, and this is...
Very likely the last one.
Well, okay, no, slow down. For those of you that have looked at the show notes, you'll see that this episode is a double feature and that we're doing two movies back-to-back, and that's because we are going to be skipping next week for various reasons. We'll get into that later on in the show. But for the first of the two movies, it's The Innocents, 1961, directed by Jack Clayton. Starring Deborah Carr. It's based on Henry James's Turn of the Screw. This movie was a doozy.
Creepazoid.
I had never seen this movie before, but I thought, well, it's 1961. How bad could it be? Well, you didn't get through this whole movie, Tracy. In fact, you turned it off. You asked me to pause it at 1 hour and 8 minutes, and you were kind of like, I don't know if I want to continue. And then you said you did. And then you finally turned it off at 1 hour and 11 minutes. So this movie, huh?
This movie. As I'm thinking about what I want to say, I have to keep editing out the F-bomb. Because
this is a family show.
Okay, oh, my God. What a creepy movie. I'm like, I'm a little mad at you. I'm not sure you should ever show me a movie that you have not watched.
I always thought this movie was what The Haunting was. But this was like the reputation that The Haunting has is what this movie is. This movie is genuinely creepy.
Creepy. Super freaking creepy.
The basic plot of it is Deborah Carr is a governess who gets hired by a guy played by Michael Redgrave. And he is the uncle to these two children. I guess they're twins because they seem to be exactly the same age. And he's inherited them from their late parents. And he has no – like he says right up front, I have no use for children. I have no time for children. I have no interest in children. So he's basically just hiring a governess to take care of them and be their full-time parent. The first governess has died. And so he needs a replacement, and that's when he hires Deborah Carr. He sends Deborah Carr to go live in his estate somewhere up in England. And the only other people in the estate are the other employees. There's Mrs. Gross, who is like sort of the caretaker. And then you've got some other people. You've got Anna, who's another one. But basically the children are raised by Deborah Carr's character.
They're Miles and Flora.
Miles and Flora. And these are creepy kids. These really? Two are creepy kids.
Really creepy kids. And the movie starts with the little girl humming this little tune that plays a big part, it seems, in the movie. It's a black screen, and she's...
Yeah, the movie opens with 45 seconds of just this kid singing the song with no visuals. And then it cuts to the 20th Century Fox logo. Very interesting opening. Very unusual.
Very unusual.
For a 1961 movie. We should mention that the two children are played by Martin Stevens, who plays Miles, and Pamela Franklin, who plays Fleur. And Pamela Franklin is the main character in Legend of Hell House. It's the same actress.
Gosh, she grew up to be a creepier.
She grew up to be, yeah. So
no, she started out creepier.
Yeah.
She toned it down as she got older.
So the whole gist of this is that there's clearly ghosts in this place, because after a little while, Deborah Carr starts seeing ghostly visions. She sees somebody on the roof. And then she goes to investigate, and there's nobody there. And then she sees Miles, and she's like, hey, Miles, you must have seen who was up here. And he's like, what are you talking about? And just the kids seem to be sharing some sort of weird, creepy secret that they won't tell.
Lots of secrets.
Deborah Carr. And then she sees Deborah Carr sees the lady in all black out in the marsh. There's that. And then
that's the old governess.
The old governess. And we find out that the old governess killed herself. And then there was another guy. There was Quint. The guy that worked there before, and he was very close to Miles.
Didn't it feel like they were kind of alluding that he was a little too close?
A little too
Miles?
Close, yeah. They're definitely hinting at – this movie hints at a lot of stuff. This movie, as I mentioned, is directed by Jack Clayton, whose probably his most famous credit is the 1974 version of A Great Gatsby with Robert Redford and Mia Farrow. But this movie is – and it was – the cinematography is by Freddie Francis, who some of you that are listening are familiar with horror movies, directed a lot of Hammer movies. He went on to have a career as a director. This is a brilliantly atmospheric movie. I mean, really well done. The audio, all these little – there's tons – all these things of Deborah Carr at night, and you're hearing –
yeah, whispers
and whispering and things. It's,
and yeah, squeaks. And it seems at first like she hears them, and then she gets distracted by the children or distracted by something else so that she hears it, and you see her like, what? But then she gets sort of called away by something else, so she doesn't get to investigate or find out what it really is. But the creepiest thing is that these children are, let's say, uncommonly close.
Yeah, they're way too close for siblings. They spend no other time with no other kids, because we find out that Miles went to like a boarding school and he got thrown out because
he was corrupting the other children.
Corrupting the other children. And so all these two kids have spent time with each other. No other children, just each other. And you know that that's not a great idea.
So are we going to talk about what it is that they're alluding to? And like the mission of the ghosts and all that?
Go right ahead. What you think they're alluding to.
Well, Deborah Carr explains it to...
Well, but she doesn't... We don't know that she's right yet, though.
I think she's right. I think okay. When you watch the end
of the
movie...
Yeah, I'm going to watch the end of this movie by myself.
We'll find out.
I'm dying to find out how this movie ends. This is a terrific movie.
I want to know how the movie ends, but I don't want to watch it to get right there.
I will write it down on a piece of paper.
Okay, that's fine.
And then you can put the piece of paper in the freezer.
Until I'm ready to read it.
Like Joey did with The Shining. Yes. Put the book in the freezer.
Mm-hmm. Joey put Little Women in the freezer.
Oh, Joey put... Didn't he put... Okay. All right. Well, we're talking about an episode of Friends.
Rachel put The Shining in the freezer.
Rachel put The Shining in the freezer. That's what I'm talking about. Putting the scary book in the freezer. Okay.
So...
I'll put this DVD in the freezer.
Mrs. Gross, the housekeeper, explains to... I forget Deborah Kerr's name.
Miss Giddens.
Miss Giddens. Oh, by the way, like all the font choices, that was nice. explains to Miss Giddens that the man ghost, Quint, and the former governess were they were in a relationship together, and he was cruel to her and struck her, knocked her to the floor, and she didn't say straight out, but practically straight out, that they basically had sex in front of the children. And it seems as though maybe they hinted at the idea that they may have involved the children with things that they shouldn't have been involved with sex-wise. I'm like being too hedgy about it. And
they're very subtle in this movie. I mean, that stuff goes right by unless you're really paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even know that there was another caretaker until she walks into the room, and I'm like...
They mentioned her.
Right, but I'm saying I missed that. Like, that's how, like, sort of well I think this dialogue is placed, is that it's... Like,
and that's when Miss Giddens saw the woman in the hallway the first time she saw her in the house, she called Anna.
Oh, that's right. You're right. Yeah. Oh, yeah, when she sees the ghost and the... Yeah, that's a real... They play hide and seek.
Mm.
That's a really creepy sequence.
And this is another one where, you know... Oh, I hear a noise. Let me go investigate.
Mm-hmm.
I would.
Well, you would not have taken this job in the first place. So you would not have put yourself in this situation.
Well, I mean, I don't think they told her the place was haunted. They didn't tell her the place was haunted. But the first creaky.
Yeah, went out of there.
Who? What is it with all these people who like creaks in the attic and stuff?
People gonna go and and then she goes into the attic and there's the creepy doll, the clown doll
with its head
and
bobbing.
Its head is bobbing. That would have been. I would have been like, I'm out of here.
She innocently thought it was the children that said because they were playing hide and seek.
Right.
And she thought it was the children that knocked it, so she thought she was close to where they were, but no.
Oh, in the scene when they decide to switch. Doing hide and seek, and Miss Giddens hides behind the curtain, and she looks outside the window
and sees Quint.
That's a great. That is a brilliantly executed scene because he gets closer and closer, wordlessly, and then
he's looking right at her, the devil in his eyes,
and then he starts backing away, and all you see are the little pinpricks of light in his eyes. It is a wonderfully. This movie is Jack Clayton. I'm not that familiar with him. Like I said, I've seen Great Gatsby, And I've seen, I think, one other of his movies. But this is terrific. This is really well directed. And I was doing some lookups, trivia-wise, about this. And this movie is listed by Guillermo del Toro as one of his six favorite horror movies. This is Joe Dante's favorite horror movie. So a lot of these guys who kind of know this stuff say how powerful this is. Our dog Johnny is getting involved in this.
Johnny just wants attention.
Johnny just wants attention.
We are talking to each other way too much.
Don't we all? So, yeah, so you didn't... I'm blindsided by this because I thought Exorcist would be the tough one.
I think this was scarier than Exorcist.
Look at that.
Because it had so many...
You should have put that on the poster.
So many layers of creep that it's like, you know, you can't even... like. The Exorcist basically had one layer of creep.
Mm-hmm.
This is multiple layers of creep. And I was actually, I'm afraid to find out.
I knew you were getting scared when I got up to go into the kitchen while the movie's running. And then I got up again to put my sweatshirt on. And you're like, what are you doing? Sit down. And I'm like, oh boy, she doesn't want me to leave the room. I'm like, okay, do something. This blindsided me. I really figured... I would normally never for this show not watch a horror movie first before showing it to you. I would just, but I was like, how bad could this be for 1961?
Really bad.
This is really creepy.
This is I can't reconcile in my mind that this is, oh, Mr. Allison.
Well, right. Well, then we should explain why we're doing this double feature because one of your favorite movies is Heaven Knows Mr. Allison.
Love
it. We watch it all the time on Netflix. It's directed by John Huston. And it's basically, that whole movie is just a two-hander between Robert Mitchum, who is like your favorite, and Deborah Carr.
Which is his favorite.
Which is his, yeah, he loved Deborah Carr. They did four films together. They really were great pals. But anyway, that's one of your favorite movies. And
yes.
So I thought, since you showed such bravery watching The Exorcist,
we'd have an easy time of it.
We're doing a Deborah Carr / Robert Mitchum double feature where this movie, The Innocents, has Deborah Carr, and then we're going to watch Night of the Hunter, which is not exactly a horror movie. It's more of a drama thriller, but it's not something you would normally watch.
Absolutely.
And that has Robert Mitchum. So we're doing a Carr Mitchum double feature. That's the idea of this
double was supposed
feature
to be my reward for making it.
I had no
Exorcist
idea. I had no idea, babe. I really had no idea. I'm sorry. I know. Oh, the look I'm getting, everybody. I'm impressed. I'm genuinely impressed. And I'm hard to impress with horror movies because I've seen so many. But this Jack Clayton and Freddie Francis, again, there's scenes in the daytime where Deborah Carr is like, it's almost blinding white. The scenes are so overly lit. And I'm like, wow, it's such a great contrast to the darkness. And then I looked in the trivia. And they said that they went with Freddie Francis, had so many lights going during some of these scenes, he almost burned the studio down. Basically the rehearsal stages down because there were so many lights going. And they even painted some of the trees white
to make it more stark.
This is a beautiful looking movie. And there are some great close-ups where you see everything in the focus in the background, this is a brilliantly looking movie. The sound design is out of this world. The sets are great.
Yeah, you know you're in this huge house because their voices echo. You know, it has that like way too big of a room and everything is marble kind of sound.
Yeah. Yeah. This is a really good movie. I can't wait to watch the end of it and I will tell you what happens. So again, you continue to surprise me, babe, after all these years.
You don't think this was scary enough to turn off?
I understand why you thought it was scary enough to turn off. It's just most people in Vegas, when they do betting for this show, all the money would have been on The Exorcist, not on this movie. But again, you contain multitudes, so you know.
And you know, maybe there was a little bit of I knew a little bit about The Exorcist. I have no idea.
Yeah, I didn't know. I don't know. Yeah.
And it's super creepy.
Yeah, I have no idea if this is like even really a ghost story. It might be all like a Scooby-Doo thing at the end where they're all trying to like put the whammy on Deborah Carr. I have no idea. I literally don't know where this is going, which is what I like. I cannot say how impressive. This is the DVD we have of this is part of the Criterion Collection, which is like the Criterion is, you know, you remember when I went to the offices that time, I told you about the Criterion, how much I like the Criterion. There's a audio commentary on this DVD. I might need to watch that before we return it.
You should watch that, yeah. You should.
I should. Yeah, this is, this is a genuinely impressive movie.
And genuinely creepy. I'm not sure if I've gotten that across.
Yeah.
Creepy.
Said so. We paused it at 68, and then we stopped it at 71. So that's how far we got. Call of time. We're calling it Time of Death, 1 hour and 11 minutes. So again, what a tribute to Freddie Francis and Jack Clayton and Deborah Carr and everybody that you could get through The Exorcist without pausing, and yet you couldn't get through.
Mm-mm. And there were
The Innocents.
Just I was creeped out before they even showed the 20th Century logo. And then I guess when she, like right at the very beginning, when she gets dropped off at the gatehouse and walks to the mansion, that was creepy. The singing. Oh, that singing.
Yeah, well, children singing kind of like mindlessly. Yeah, that kind of, it's like The Omen or something. That's always
haunting music.
Yeah, it's always a little.
And something about death and my love, and it's just like a completely inappropriate song for a
child. And you know that Miles is a little sociopath.
Oh, like, yeah.
Because there's one point where he plays dress up, and she starts talking to him, and he turns and looks at her, and he gives her like this death stare. Mm-hmm. Like, he's really
creepy. Then he was hurting her up in the attic.
Oh, right, yeah. When he finds her, because they're playing hide and go seek, and he puts his arm around her neck. Now, he's a little kid, but she's like, "You're hurting me, Miles." And he's like, basically, "No, I'm not." And she's like, "Yeah, you are." And he's like, "No, I'm not." And he's like, you know, like.
And she's like, you're hurting me.
Yeah, he's not listening.
She's getting distressed and he's not listening.
Yep.
But then as soon as Flora comes in, he stops.
Yep. Yeah. I can't.
Like, his little sister is like, he's worried about his little sister seeing. That. Ooh, what a creepy movie. Oh, yep. God.
All right. Blew. Okay. Well, like I said, Deborah Carr, man, we love her. She's great.
She's tough.
She's terrific in this movie.
I'm going to stick to Heaven Knows, Mr. Alice.
Yeah, Heaven Knows. Okay. Well, like I said, is there anything else we want to say about The Innocents?
It's creepy.
Creepy. Okay. I think we've got that across. It's creepy. So, okay. Well, we're going to take a break. And then when we come back, we are going to talk about Robert Mitchum in Night of the Hunter. So stay
tuned. After you watch it first.
After. Well, I've already seen Night of the Hunter.
Okay.
Yeah, we're not going blind on this one. No,
Thank God.
I've seen Night of the Hunter. So, anyway, so we're going to... I'm sorry I put you through this bit. So, but I love you.
I love you more.
I got to ramp up that part of the audio. Nobody could hear it. Okay, we're going to take a little break. And when we get back, we're going to watch Robert Mitchum in Night of the Hunter. So, stay tuned.
Whatever are you doing there, miss? Heavens, child, you're white as milk.
I saw him. Don't tell me I didn't, because I did. I saw him staring.
Who, miss?
The same man, the man on the tower.
The tower?
But now, just now, he was staring past me into the house as if he were hunting someone.
Oh, what's he like, miss?
Oh, he had dark, curling hair and the hardest, the coldest eyes.
You see, would you say he was very handsome?
Oh, yes, yes, handsome, handsome and obscene. But I've seen him before. Yes, I know where I've seen him. A picture. There's a picture of him.
A miniature in a cracked glass in the attic. I'll show you.
It can't be.
It can't be.
You know him.
Quint. Peter Quint, the master's valet.
But you said...
Yes, miss, you see, he's dead. Quint is dead.
Okay, we're back for part two of our Deborah Carr, Robert Mitchum double feature. As we talked about, this is films that, you know, it's them individually, not together. But you're a big fan of Heaven Knows Mr. Allison, which is the movie with the two of them. They did other movies together, but Heaven Knows Mr. Allison is your big favorite. We've watched it probably hundreds of times at this point. Before we even talk about Night of the Hunter, though, I just want to ask you a little bit, like, what's the deal with Robert Mitchum? I mean, obviously, you like rough-hewn men of action named Robert. That is a given.
Well, duh.
So, you know, other than that, I mean, what is it about Robert Mitchum that you like so much?
I think it's the character that he played in Heaven Knows Mr. Allison.
Okay.
That he was so sweet and so, I don't know, just like, the two of them together had wonderful chemistry.
They did.
And they both cared for each other, and there was a certain attraction because of chemistry, but both of them really knew, particularly Sister Angela knew that she couldn't...
Deborah Carr.
Yeah. Knew that she couldn't pursue a relationship with him because she, her heart belonged to Jesus Christ. And because she's a nun, in case you didn't know. Sister Angela.
Yes.
So it was that character.
So most of your love from Robert Mitchum springs from Heaven Knows Mr. Allison.
Yes.
So, okay. Yes. Yeah, he's terrific in the movie. He's terrific. And you know, they really liked one another. There's a story that I read you about another movie they did called The Sundowners, where
we watched that.
Yeah. Where they were originally going to get Gary Cooper to do it, and then he couldn't do it because he was kind of old and frail at that point. And they got Robert Mitchum to fill in at the last moment, and they sort of said, is it okay that Deborah Carr gets top billing? Because that was the plan. And he said, you can erect a giant cutout of me bowing to her if you like. He just had no ego when it came to her. He just thought she was the bee's knees. So that's why we were doing these two movies. And I told you about Night of the Hunter a while back, and I told you that he's a real SOB in this movie. And you didn't want to see it for that reason, because you didn't want to see Robert Mitchum that way.
I like him as Mr. Allison.
Right. But I thought that you would like this movie, or at least find it interesting, because Robert Mitchum said this was his favorite film that he ever did, and it was the favorite. Charles Laughton, the actor, directed this movie. It's the only movie he ever directed. And Robert Mitchum said Laughton was his favorite director that he ever worked with. So I thought if you like Robert Mitchum, you would get a greater appreciation of his skills by seeing him play a role. Rotten bastard. So that's why I'm sort of sneaking this movie in into this horror movie show, because this is not a horror movie. It's a thriller, but not a horror movie.
I really don't like seeing him as a bad guy.
Right.
There was another movie that you showed me with him as a bad guy.
I forget.
A Western.
Oh, there was, yeah, there's...
With John Wayne, because he was the only guy who could believably take down John Wayne.
Rio.
Yeah, he did.
Yes, yeah, Rio, oh no, El Dorado, yeah, that whole story about the, yeah, Robert Mitchum's in the movie with John Wayne.
It's interesting that he plays a preacher in both, like a bad guy preacher in both of those movies, El Dorado and Night of the
Well, he's not a preacher in El Dorado, he's a preacher in another movie I showed you. Yeah, he's not a preacher in El Dorado.
They're all blending together.
Anyway, let's talk about Night of the Hunter. The basic plot of this is Robert Mitchum is supposedly a preacher. We have nothing to go by that he's really a preacher. He just says that he's a preacher. But he is, we know that he's a murderer because the movie opens with somebody dead, and we kind of know that he's the one who committed the crime. He ends up in jail with Peter Graves, who buried this money somewhere in his house, and he told his son, don't ever reveal where you have the money, don't tell your mother, don't tell your sister. And Robert Mitchum gets wind of that there's this money out there. What?
The sister knew, because she wasn't allowed to tell either. And all through the movie, John had to tell Pearl to keep her big trap shut.
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, initially, in that opening scene, though, Peter Graves says, don't tell your sister, don't tell
you. He did it right in front of her.
No, I don't think he did.
Yeah, he did.
Anyway, okay. Well, it doesn't matter.
Because he swore them both to secrecy right there in that scene.
The kids know where the money's buried. The mother, played by Shelley Winters, mm-hmm. does not. And Robert Mitchum, basically, after he gets out of prison, moves in to trying to romance Shelley Winters, all with the idea of that he's going to find out where this money is. So Shelley Winters thinks that he really loves her mm-hmm. when it's all a front. Mm-hmm. And he is this real... Mitchum is a real oily type. He's got the words love and hate tattooed on his knuckles. He has this whole spiel about, you know, the hands of God, the love versus hate, and they're fighting it out and all stuff like that. And he's terrific in this movie. I mean, but I'm talking a lot. What did you think of it?
I thought, like, at first, I wasn't nuts about it. And in retrospect, I really appreciate the artistry that they used. They said it was a very low budget film.
Yeah.
The artistry that they use to make up for the low budget doesn't come across as low-budget film trying to do everything on a low budget.
Mm-hmm.
They did it on a low budget in a very artistic way.
It's a beautiful movie.
Almost as if it was the choice, not the budget.
Right.
That made it look the way it did. It really, like, really really interesting interpretations of sets that were, in some cases, kind of storybookish.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, this is like a dark children's book.
Yeah,
I mean, really, the main protagonist is the young kid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's John really the Powell. Main John Pat. Yeah, he's really the main.
Oh, and that Pearl. Oh my
yeah,
goodness!
Yeah, the younger sister Pearl. You were
Why
very frustrated with Pearl.
Just put a sock in her mouth or something.
Yeah. My Dolly has the money.
Oh. Little Pearl and Icy Spoon. This is a character in the movie. Her name is Icy Spoon.
Yeah.
You can't make this stuff up. Or can you?
Well, actually, they did. They did, in fact, make it all up.
So, Icy Spoon is, falls, like...
The old lady that runs, like, the ice cream parlor.
Yeah. She falls in love
That Shelley Winters works at.
With, Robert Mitchum.
Yeah.
What's his character's name?
He's Preacher. They call him Preacher through most of the movie, but his name is Harry Powell.
Harry Powers.
Powell.
Powers.
Powell.
Powers.
Powell.
Powers.
It's really Harry Powell.
John Powell and
no.
Willa Powell.
Mm. It's really Harry Powell.
It is Powell. Then what are the kids' names? We have to take all this out.
The kids are Harper. Kids' names are John Harper and Pearl Harper.
Way off. Okay.
Yeah. Harry Powell.
Okay, so what was I talking about now?
I forget. Oh, well, the old lady, Mrs. Spoon, completely is snookered by Robert Mitchum's fake religious patter. Like, she is just like, oh! She almost has, like, a thing for him, but she's too old.
Right.
So she tries to pawn him off on Shelley Winters, who is, of course, is now a widower.
And
because
she thinks she's doing her a big favor.
Yeah.
Oh. And then the honeymoon night, that was, like, heartbreaking.
Yeah, Shelley Winters' character takes a real weird turn where they get married and he reveals that he has no interest in having sex with her.
Sex is only for procreation.
And you think in that moment that she's going to kind of, like, finally see him for the shit that he is. And instead...
She begs the Lord to make her clean the way Harry wants her to be.
Yep, she completely subsumes her personality to fit what he wants from her. And so you're like, wow, she's gone. And it doesn't... We don't want to spoil too much about it because I think everybody should watch this movie. I think this is a classic, this movie. But it doesn't really work. I mean, she tries to subsume who she is and then she bites her in the ass.
She starts lying. I'm not sure whether she was lying to the congregation or lying to herself.
The money being buried? Yeah.
The things that happened with her husband and
she becomes
the
money. A total zealot.
Yeah.
Total zealot, yeah.
Kind of. It's interesting that, like, you're never really certain if Harry Powell believes in what he's preaching or he's just doing it to get the money.
Right.
Because he certainly does a lot of other things to get the money. And if he's actually religious, he certainly has a problem with the stealing, the lying, the murdering people. You know, those are commandments that he breaks on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm.
So,
And it's amazing how everyone in the town falls so completely for every story. Because, like, there's a thing about, a bunch of gypsies stole somebody's horse. And then we see the next scene of Robert Mitchum on the horse. And you know immediately, he stole the horse. But they completely buy into it was just a bunch of gypsies. Uh-huh. You know, and, you know, we don't know whether Harry Powell used that as a story. Or that's just an assumption that they make. But, you know... people fall for snake oil salesmen, as we know.
Mm-hmm.
60 years later, nothing's changed. You mentioned the look of this movie. As I mentioned, this is directed by Charles Laughton, the actor. This is the only film he ever directed. The cinematography is by a guy named Stanley Cortez, who previously worked with Orson Welles. And Stanley Cortez did a movie of Orson Welles' called The Magnificent Ambersons, which is Orson Welles' second movie after Citizen Kane. Mm-hmm. It is a gorgeous movie. And Stanley Cortez was one of the great people ever to do it. And he apparently said years later, of all the directors he ever worked with, only two of them really understood how to use light. And that was Orson Welles and Charles Laughton.
Wow.
Which is an extraordinary compliment to give Charles Laughton, considering he made
this
one
movie. Knew what he was talking about.
Made one movie. And the scene where John gets in the rowboat and they're going down the river, and it looks like a storybook. Like, the moon is way too big for it to be realistic, but it works.
And the stars in the sky
the stars
are, way
are super
too clear.
Bright.
And the almost like cut out silhouettes, they are cut
right when they get to the right when they get to the house.
Well,
and the
even
barn.
The trees in the background, like the foreground is the rabbits in the bushes,
right.
And their
frogs, all the light. Yeah, though.
But the background is silhouettes, and it's a really cool look. It really feels like you're watching a storybook unfold.
Yeah, it's a dark story, and it's got an amazing. Amazing. This movie's only 95 minutes. They pack a lot in.
Mm-hmm.
The amazing third act where the kids end up living with the old
Lillian Gish,
old
Rachel
silence
Cooper.
Star, Lillian Gish. And she, you know, she's an old lady by this point, but she does not take any shit because the first time Harry Powell shows up to grab the kids, she pulls out a shotgun.
She's like, get off my lawn.
Yeah, she's
she
a
reminded
tough old
bird. Me of the two old uncles in Secondhand Lions.
Oh, Michael Caine and Robert
Duvall. Something about crotchety old people with guns.
you are a big fan of crotchety old people who are new, who are like kind of who are nice, like not, you know, old racist
they're
like nice.
No,
people.
Right. They're protective. They're not
Yeah, she's protecting this whole brood of people, of kids that she's
stray
adopted.
Kids. She's taking in all these kids.
I read this and I want to mention it to you was that Charles Laughton originally offered that role of the old lady. He offered it to his wife, Elsa Lanchester, who, of course, was the Bride of Frankenstein. And she turned it down. And so he gave it to Lillian Gish. And apparently Lillian Gish was like, why would you even consider me? Like, you know, and he said, Charles Laughton said, when I was a kid or when I was a young man, people used to go to the movies and they sat up straight. And they watched the screen intently. He says, nowadays they lay and they slouch and they slurp their soda and they drink their popcorn. And I want people to sit up straight again. And he looked at her as like the way to do it. And she is a force of nature in this
movie.
Yes,
she is.
She's the first person you see in the movie. And she's the last person you see in this movie. She is tremendous in this movie.
She's a tough old bird.
Yeah. Robert, right? I mean, you would think most people could not stand up to Robert Mitchum. But she goes toe-to-toe with him. And as you mentioned, the visuals, there's this wonderful scene of John in the barn when he's hiding out. Mm-hmm. And you look out the door and you see Harry on the horse. And it's all one shot. And it's all forced perspective because that wasn't Robert Mitchum. That was a dwarf on a pony.
Uh-huh.
And so that way, when it looked at it, like it was proportionally worked out right. This is a startlingly beautiful movie. It really is every bit as good as I'd seen it once before, like 25 years ago, so I didn't remember a ton from it. Did you come to appreciate Robert Mitchum more now that you saw him in such a different kind of role?
I'll tell you what, there are a couple times where he was doing crazy, you know, up at...
He has this great thing where you see the tops of his eye, the tops of his pupils.
There are two times where I just, like, it practically gave me chills. I'm like, whoa, he's really crazy. I'm like, not my Bobby, no. Yeah, no, I definitely appreciate his ability. I still love him as
Mr. Allison.
Yeah.
For any of you who have not seen Heaven Knows Mr. Allison, it's on Netflix. So
watch it.
It's a great movie. It's a two-hander. It's just him and Deborah Carr, directed by John Huston. There's a couple other people in it, but basically it's just the two of them through the whole movie. It's a very sweet movie. They're great together.
They are.
It's funny. This movie was supposed to be Gary Cooper as well. So that's two different movies that Robert Mitchum picked up for Gary Cooper because Gary Cooper was feeling a little too
poorly.
He was too old to do Sundowners, and he was uncomfortable with doing this role because he was such an ass in this movie, such a loathsome person. He didn't want to take that part. So Robert Mitchum was willing to take it.
Huh?
Yeah.
Robert Mitchum didn't care.
Right? He knew it was good. So yeah, and he was always very proud of this movie. So well, I'm glad that you watched it because I thought it would just give you a greater appreciation of him, and so that's why I sort of snuck this in under the horror movie umbrella of this series, because it's not a horror movie.
And
it's not really.
It was definitely tense when.
But you got through the whole thing. There was never a point where you were like, turn it off. Or
oh no, no, nowhere near.
Right.
But no, there were times when it was definitely tense, and you know they held the tension through the whole thing, which I guess at 95 minutes it's not that big of a deal. But I never
still
felt
hard
like,
to do.
Never felt for a moment like this was too long or that it lagged. I got bored. Mm-hmm. Never.
Yeah, it's an amazing journey. Amazing, mm-hmm. amazing journey. It's a great movie, and it's a shame Charles Laughton never. This movie was not a hit, and it's an uncomfortable movie. I don't know if people wanted to see it in 1955, but Charles Laughton never directed again, which is too bad because he clearly knew what he was doing.
Right. How about that scene? Not the honeymoon. Well, even in the honeymoon scene, her bedroom looks like a church.
Right.
The way the ceiling goes, and the way it's mm-hmm. lit, and the way the light comes in the window like a shaft of light.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last scene with Willa alive. It's in the same place. It's in that bedroom. It looks like a church. He's standing in the shaft of light and raises his knife. And Willa is lying on the bed with her arms crossed as if she's already dead. And they're talking to each other. And you already know that she's prepared for him to kill her.
Yeah, she seems accepting of what he's trying to do. Yeah.
That's just... That was really creepy. And Icy Spoon's cloying voice was creepy. Yeah. And that was another thing, you know, you were talking about The Shining with the odd things that didn't fit.
Oh, right. The architecture that doesn't make any sense, yeah.
The house was impossibly small from the outside.
Right, there's the great scene with Mitchum and John in the hallway where the hallway looks like you barely could move your shoulders through it.
Yeah, like a doll. They're in a dollhouse. Like, but from the outside, it's impossibly small.
Right.
It looks even more like a dollhouse from the outside than it does from the inside.
Right.
And then, who were the Lilliputians that lived in this house before the Harper family? And then... You know, when the kids go downriver and they get to Rachel Cooper's house, her house is tiny. It's hard to imagine that she packs the cat in the window and herself and, what is it, five other children?
Something like that, yeah.
And when you're inside the house, it's so much bigger.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like Harry Potter, the tents. The barn is all cattywampus, and yet it doesn't take you out of the movie. I think it actually holds you in it
mm-hmm.
because it gives you that feeling of being like something's just off.
Mm-hmm.
But still beautiful.
Yeah. Charles Laughton saw a lot of German expressionist silent movies of the 20s, and they had that look where hallways are off on slight angles and things just don't make any sense. Like the whole scene in the basement
mm-hmm.
where... The only light you see is coming from when the door is open to the kitchen.
Uh-huh.
And, like, the way they block out almost entire chunks of the room and you just see the... Like, you're just being shown the parts of the basement you need to see.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the rest of it is just, like, inky blackness. Mm-hmm. It's a very German expressionist kind of movie, and that was something Laughton wanted to achieve. And being a movie director, not that I would know, but, like, you know, it's not just about... You know, like learning how to direct your actors, you have to kind of have like a visual approach to the mm-hmm. movie too. And he had a very strong visual, and that's why this movie is so well renowned.
Where it was like the shaft of light from upstairs, what John went towards the light, if you will. Mm-hmm. You know, he ran up the stairs, and Harry Powell was
chasing after him,
and just a couple steps behind.
He looks like Frankenstein.
Yeah,
there's that great scene where he literally looks like where his coat cuffs are too short, and he looks mm-hmm. literally like Frankenstein chasing after the kids. It's a remarkable movie. It's really remarkable. Huh. Well, all right. Well, are you glad you saw it?
Oh yeah, I'm glad I saw it.
Good. All right, like I said, anything more, appreciate Robert Mitchum. And we're going to watch more Robert Mitchum stuff, too, because he did so many great movies.
My Bobby.
Yes, he did so many great movies. And this one's probably
How many movies did he do?
Oh, he was in I think he's probably got like 70 or 80 credits, I think, or something wow. like that. I mean, before he got, but you know, he did a lot of great movies, and this is probably his worst in terms of being the bad guy. So this mm-hmm. is, you got through the worst part in terms of, you know, how you don't want to see him. Mm-hmm. He's probably no nicer than he ever is going to be in Heaven Knows Mr. Allison. So you've probably seen the Alpha and Omega now.
Okay.
Of Robert Mitchum. So, all right. Well, listen, I'm glad you enjoyed it. I'm glad you had another chance to enjoy Robert Mitchum. Us Bobs have to stick together, you know, so. So, okay, well, that's going to do it for our double feature, The Innocents, which you did not get through all the way through.
No.
Although we should update everybody, because when we recorded The Innocents segments a couple days previously, you watched the rest of the movie with the audio commentary. You are not an audio commentary person.
No.
But you actually wanted to watch the audio commentary for mm-hmm. The Innocents, and you got through the rest of the movie with the commentary on during the day.
And the jump scare was still a jump scare.
Yeah, you still jumped a little, yeah. But that's how much you like The Innocents, that you watch mm-hmm. audio commentary. If you're watching audio commentary, I know you really like something, because mm-hmm. that's not your thing. So.
No.
So, all right, well, this was...
Leave the magic.
Yeah, there you go. So, okay, well, we had two winners here. So that's our Deborah Carr, Robert Mitchum double feature, everybody. Again, thanks so much for all the comments. The Exorcist episode went over very well. I think most people are going to be surprised that you got through The Exorcist but didn't get through The Innocents.
Which doesn't even sound logical.
You keep this show fresh, babe.
Oh, thank you, sweetie.
So I guess that is going to do it. So I'm recording this on my birthday, so thank you very much for giving me such a nice birthday.
Aw, sweetie.
Thank you. So, I don't know what we're going to do next. I have a couple of ideas, but it'll be something good. Trust me. So,
Oh, yay.
So, again, thanks everybody for supporting the show. Everybody's left really nice comments. Robert Ward particularly left that comment on Facebook about us on the show, which was very, very kind. We both appreciate that. And all the feedback everybody leaves, it's really a lot of fun. So thanks everybody for listening. And, I guess we will see you in the next episode. So until then, I love you.
I love you more.
I love you way more.
I doubt it.
Okay. Well, we'll settle this later. All right. See you later, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Maybe she just run off on a spree.
No.
There's no harm in hoping.
There's no sense in it, neither. I figured something like that was brewing when she went to bed last night.
How?
Well, she tarried around in the kitchen after I'd gone up. And when I went downstairs to see what was wrong...
What?
Well, she'd found this jar of dandelion wine that the husband at Harper hid summers in the cellar. She was drinking.
Oh.
I tried to save her.
I know you did, Mr. Powell. Oh, I know how hard you tried.
But the devil wins sometimes.